The content in this program is for informational purposes only. You should not construe any information or other material as investment, financial, tax, or other advice. The views expressed by the participants are solely their own. A participant may have taken or recommended any investment position discussed, but may close such position or alter its recommendation at any time without notice. Nothing contained in this program constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, endorsement, or offer to buy or sell any securities or other financial instruments in any jurisdiction. Please consult your own investment or financial advisor for advice related to all investment decisions. Don't forget to follow at Lead Lag Report on Twitter to join these conversations live. And check out the Lead Lag Report at www.leadlagreport.com. Use promo code PODCAST30 for 2 weeks free and 30% off to get access to award-winning research and anticipate stock market crashes, corrections, and bear markets. And now, on to our Lead Lag Live discussion hosted by Michael Guyatt.
My name is Michael Guyatt, publisher of the Lead Lag Report. Joining me for the hour is David Floyd, Aspen Trading Group. David, it's been a while, so refresh my memory and introduce yourself to the audience here as well. Who are you? What's your background? How'd you get involved in interested in markets? And what's your specialty?
Sure. Yeah. Thanks for having me, Michael. I do appreciate it. It's been just over a year, if my memory serves me correct. But either way, you know, I've been in the industry a long time, 20-odd years, probably 25, I believe. And I started off on the institutional side, filling orders on the FX and fixed income desk of a bank. But I found myself shortly after electronically trading, one of the first probably in the country to trade electronically directly on the NYSE back in the mid 90s, probably 95, I believe, is when I got started. So I started off in terms of like a professional trader, so to speak, as purely a scalper of New York Stock Exchange stocks. And over the years, I migrated to doing some swing trading in currencies, but basically never left the overall kind of day trading mentality. I day trade and swing trade depending on the asset class and where I am right now in terms of Aspen Trading Group, company I've had since 2004. I provide my insights to my clients, but the main thing I do is run a managed account based on all the trading that I do on a day-to-day basis. And that's where my sole focus is right now.
So since you mentioned scalping, I kind of feel like that's an interesting strategy to talk through, especially in a arguably high and low volatility environment, which we'll talk about that's happening at the same time in terms of internally at the market currently. Explain to the audience what exactly scalping is in practice and how does volatility play into it?
Oh, God. Well, without the volatility, it becomes a whole lot harder because, you know, the classic definition of scalping is what a lot of market makers and stuff used to do. You know, you'd buy on the bid and sell on the offer, and you're just trying to scalp that spread. I would define scalping, or maybe what I would call like high velocity trading, as something where you're catching intraday momentum. So you're typically lifting the offer, or, you know, taking pieces of the offer, looking for that offer to go bid and then the next offer to get lifted and ride that momentum spike. So it's not purely a buy on the bid, sell on the offer. It's definitely more of a momentum play. So in that case, you really need that volatility and you need that price persistency. So sideways markets don't do traders of any type much favors, and it certainly doesn't do anything for an intraday or a high velocity trader. And it also depends on the asset class. You know, not all asset classes are designed to be whipped around in terms of high frequency trading. You know, something like the S&P futures, very well suited for that. FX, not so much. So it just depends. You know, you got to pick the markets that are going to be best suited to that strategy, and not all markets are.
So you mentioned sideways. I think that's sort of a good area to focus on. This has been, you can argue, one of the more maddening environments. Last year was brutal. This year, I think, is brutal in a different way, in that you don't have a rising tide lifting all boats. I saw some Barron's headline yesterday that I tweeted out that suggests that this is the first time in a pre-election year, you know, pretty much in history, or in 74 years, some obscene length of time, where small caps are negative at this point in the cycle. Pre-election years tend to be the strongest. You got a lot of volatility in small caps because of the COVID around regional banks. You look at the headline averages, not doing all that much, right? I mean, everyone's getting hyped up, super bullish, super bearish, but we've been sideways. So how have you yourself been trading through this kind of environment and where you're focusing, the trades around?
Yeah, well, there's a little bit of a nested question there because you started off with last year. I mean, last year was a big heads up for a lot of people. You know, for me as a shorter term trader, I can adjust to a regime change pretty quick. So I don't care if it's upside volatility or downside volatility. I can get on board with that. So, 2023 for me or 2022 was a really solid year. This year is like pulling teeth, to pull out some returns this year. You're working really hard because of the nature of what you're talking about. Everybody has an opinion on the market. Those opinions have some validity. But price action, by and large, is going nowhere for the last couple of months. I mean, just on the S&Ps, we're between 4110, 4170, and there's a lot of noise in between. So even for swing traders, that's a difficult environment. That's, 60, 70 point range, but it's kind of like a colleague of mine used to say, it's kind of like trying to catch Jell-O or, pick up a piece of Jell-O on a dinner plate with a knife. You stab it and it goes to the other side of the plate. So you're on a short-term basis, you're really going even shorter term. You're trying to take advantage of those moves intraday, but it's not easy. But make no mistake, this is a challenging market. And when we get that break, that's going to give us some relief. But like I was telling clients this morning, we've had so many attempts to break to the upside, so many attempts to break to the downside that everybody's a bit gun shy. Nobody wants to be the first one out into the open field. And I think most traders, unless you're just lucky, are probably going to miss that initial move out of this range. And that's okay. I don't need to be the first one leading the charge higher or lower. I'll be happy to hitch my wagon once that trend gets reestablished, be it up or down.
But see, I think that's the challenge, is that it's not clear what to even focus on for whenever that break occurs. So if you look at the S&P, okay, upper end of the range, you'll get small caps, lower end of the range. I mean, it's legitimately like two totally different markets.
Yeah.
Which what's your sense of which is closer to being right? The breakdown of small caps and then maybe large caps follow this time around, or large caps leading the way? I'll tell you just my own personal thought on this. I think small caps probably have this right. And I'm saying that purely because consumer stocks are confirming, lumber's confirming. There does seem to be an underlying bet that consumer weakness is here.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And, I think one of the things that a lot of people forget is that regardless of the time frame you trade, it's always helpful to have a macro narrative. And that narrative that you just talked about, that may not make a difference on my next trade per se, because I'm in and out so quickly, but it helps to contextualize where we are in the market. So I would agree with you. I think, again, I can't say with any degree of certainty, but when you have Apple representing about 7% of the S&P, and you have all this constant inflow of passive money coming in, 401k, automatic investing, there's still that flow issue that keeps the large caps pumped up. And again, that's a little bit of speculation, although I think there's a lot of evidence to support that. So, at some point, yes, I would love to see the market move lower because that creates better trading opportunities. And I think based on the statistics you just cited in your observations, I would tend to agree with you. So I'm certainly going to be a much more aggressive on the downside, although I usually am anyways, because stocks, as we all know, they take the stairs up and then they take the elevator down. I'm much more content trading in a risk-off environment because you just get more volatility and more, much more range expansion than you do in a slow grind up.
And presumably your way of expressing that is more on maybe shorting or just having a shorter time frame, as you kind of allude to, which we'll touch on a little bit more. But are there other things that you tend to do in kind of risk off high volatility type of junctures? I mean, I've been noting, I think the dollar is now probably due for a move higher. Have a nice update so far today. But how do you typically express a more negative bet?
Well, I'll always just go the most simple way, which is to get short the underlying, whether it be a stock or, for me in my case, normally S&P futures. That's the way I would express the bet. I mean, once in a while, I'll sell call spreads and stuff if I want something that doesn't have quite the insanity in terms of the daily P&L swings. but I try to keep it pretty straightforward. I'm not trying to get too complex in terms of expressing a view in a related market when my view is actually, hey, I'm bearish the S&P, so why not just be bearish the S&Ps as opposed to being bearish some related market or long a market that's inversely correlated with the S&Ps. Those are all perfectly legitimate, but I just tend to go right to where the source is, because I do tend to trade in the big thick markets, 10-year notes, S&P futures, and then the major FX pair. So I like to go where there's a lot of liquidity and a lot of, let's say, true pass-through of information that's not really, you know, you're not losing out on that. Nothing's getting diffused from what's hitting the market in terms of information. There's a very clean relationship as opposed to other asset classes where that information may or may not have the same impact on it.
Okay, now of those kind of liquid areas that you're focusing on, does your time frame change based on what the asset class you're trading? In other words, you know, are you much more shorter term with stocks than those 10-year notes, or with Forex because the dynamics of the way price moves are different? Or are you pretty much using the same time frame across the board?
No, it's a great question. And there's definitely a differentiation. First and foremost, in the market we're in right now, where you've got this sideways chop, and it doesn't matter what market you're looking at. FX markets are very choppy. You know, every market's choppy. And that's kind of a thing that I think a lot of people should pay attention to. If one dominant market is crap, most likely all the other markets are pretty crappy to trade as well. There's never usually a more, you know, silver lined horizon, so to speak. But in a sideways market, my time frame for, you know, trade duration definitely goes down. And in a sideways market, I really can't find swing trading opportunities that I'm comfortable taking. So that for me takes the FX markets, largely speaking, off the plate. I've done so few FX trades recently. I'm currently short the euro, been short for a couple of weeks, but that was like the first trade in FX in probably a good 8 weeks or maybe 5 or 6 weeks. So in a sideways market, I'm much more comfortable on keeping the trade duration very short because I know there's not much range expansion. So I'm willing to go in and just take what I can get, add a little bit to the bottom line, generate some alpha that way. And, you know, when we get that range expansion, okay, then I can go back to say something like 10-year notes and or FX markets, because then there'll be enough range for me to take a more of a longer, you know, longer term for me, that is a longer term approach where the trade may last for several days or maybe a week or two.
Do you factor in sentiment at all when you're playing with different asset classes? So I had Charles Rotblat of AAII on a Twitter space yesterday. And it's funny, I had like kind of aha moment in talking to him because a lot of people reference sentiment surveys, you know, extreme bears, extreme bulls when it comes to stocks based on AAII surveys. But the question on the survey is, where do you think stocks will be 6 months from now? And that 6 months is very different than tomorrow, right? So a lot of people will say, well, look at the sentiment side of stocks. Everyone's bearish. So that means stocks have to go up next week. It's like, no, that's over a 6 month period that question was asked in the survey. So it's not predictive of anything very, very short term. But do you use sentiment in any way? And if you do, what helps you determine sort of the mood of the crowd?
Well, I probably don't use it to the level of specificity that you're kind of asking. But again, it's one of those things that gets kind of plopped in the back of my head. You know, if everybody's bullish or if everybody's bearish, that factors in. It's definitely more of a, you know, a secondary consideration for me. But, you know, what I've learned over the years is that if you can keep a good pulse of what the market's thinking and doing, it definitely can help you regardless of the time frame that you're trading. Because at the end of the day, all these moves, whether you're an investor, a scalper, or somewhere in between, it's all based on flows and what people decide to do at any moment in time, which, of course, is very hard to know. So knowing that maybe everybody from a psychological perspective is bullish or bearish, that helps me know that when we maybe, if we break in the opposite direction, those flows would get exacerbated and make that move a little bit more robust than if the move was in line with what everybody was thinking about in terms of sentiment. Because as traders, we're all looking for the move that kind of catches everybody off guard. And that doesn't mean you're a contrarian. It just means that you're cognizant of how maybe people are positioned. And then when something goes against that, you know that you'll get a far better reaction to that than if the move is already in the direction that people are positioned. So you're looking for those minor or even major dislocations. No way to know for certain, but if you can just at least have a sense of where the market is leaning, that'll help you when price action moves in a particular direction.
So
we'll be back after a quick break.
Hello, listeners. Michael Guyatt here from Lead Lag Live. Are you ready to take a deep dive into market trends, risk management, and investment strategies? Then you need the Lead Lag Report. Our in-depth analysis helps you understand the financial markets like never before. And guess what? We're giving you a chance to experience it at a discounted rate. Visit theleadlag.report/leadlaglive and get an exclusive 30% off on your subscription. Don't miss out. Level up your investment game with the Lead Lag Report. And now, back to our discussion.
Everyone, you know, focuses on performance. I know what you want to make this a big part of this Twitter space, and I alluded to it in a couple of tweets here. But lay out for the audience why people need to go beyond just the value of their portfolio. I think a lot of people think in terms of dollars, when in reality, performance is more than just total return.
Yeah, I think it's, the best way to kind of put a label on what you're alluding to is, you know, performance metrics, whether it be from a trader's perspective or your portfolio. A lot of information can be garnered as to what's in your portfolio, or maybe what your how good or effective your trading style is, or maybe not effective, by not just looking at your total return. Because I think a lot of people up until 2022 were looking at the things they owned and the performance was good, and then whack, they took a massive hit, massive drawdown. And I'm not saying that that was completely avoidable, because nobody can usually have that type of foresight. But I think if you look at underlying performance metrics of ETFs, you know, fund managers, hedge fund managers, you can usually tell by their underlying metrics, you know, whether or not that's maybe a riskier investment than you once thought. The fact is, most managers tend to own the same things. They get overowned. And then when the bottom falls out, or if the bottom falls out, they all go tumbling down. Again, they stair step up and then take the elevator down. And I think by looking at performance metrics, you can get a sense of whether or not that's the case. I mean, you can look at their portfolio construction and know the same thing. But what does a manager do, or what does a trader do in various types of markets? And that's really key. And I think, I'm assuming you would agree, I don't know all your views on the markets, but I'm not expecting a return to the buy the pullback and everybody's has the birthright of a 10% total return every year. I think the next several years are going to be very challenging. Doesn't mean we go straight down, but we may just not go a whole lot of distance over a several year period. And that's going to be a big wake up call for a lot of people. And you're going to need to find investment vehicles that are going to help you navigate that, because it's not just buying some stocks and sitting around anymore. At least that's not how I see it going forward.
You know, I've made this point before. I do think we're in that, you know, we're in an age of turbulence. And for all we know, we may already be in a lost decade. It's like I keep making that joke. It's, you don't know you're in a lost decade until after the decade. Right. So it's hard to really know, you know, when you're in the thick of it, what's really happening. But, you know, can you have stocks go higher with elevated rates? Of course. I've put out that tweet many times. It's a headwind, but it's not something that necessarily is a guarantee of losses or a lost decade. But just given the sheer amount of leverage in the system, and given how precise the Federal Reserve has to be against that leverage, when you're in an environment where it's easy to make mistakes from a policy perspective, it's easy to have an environment where you're really ultimately going nowhere with a lot of maddening volatility, right, in between the endpoints, I'd argue.
That's exactly right. And that's the thing I think that for everybody, you know, especially those that haven't been in the industry for a while, that's way too many variables to try to put together and come with a clean output as to what you should do in the market. I think most macro managers have a monumental task on a good year. how do you factor in all these variables to come up with a game plan? Like you said, I agree with you. I think we're in the lost decade, maybe certainly lost 5 years. I think it's really hard to take all of the data points that are out there right now, which are often are very conflicting, and come up with a neat and tidy game plan. So what are investors going to do? How are they going to navigate going forward? And I think it's going to be quite challenging. And, you know, I don't want to say I welcome this environment, but I'm not afraid of it because I know that I can navigate around these relatively quick changes in market direction. And when I say quick changes, you know, yeah, maybe intraday, but, you know, also on a week to week, month to month basis, you know, that doesn't bother me. And I think investors are going to have a component within their portfolios that offers diversification or anti-correlation to the large indices, because you're going to need some diversification in your portfolio, and owning most of the typical stuff that supposedly adds diversification, it really doesn't. They all seem to have a correlation of one. Well, when things go bad,
right, and it requires a whole different mindset, right? So if you're in an environment like that, you have to have a meaner version, almost contrarian way of looking at markets. Whereas, you know, in environments like the last decade, right, all you need to do is just follow the trend. I think it's a lot easier for people to follow the trend with FOMO than to be contrarian when there is no trend. And that's going to chop a lot of people up, because it's not natural to fade strength or to buy weakness.
Yeah, but you don't even have to necessarily. I mean, yes, being a contrarian on a shorter term time frame, you know, there's certainly a couple of colleagues that I know, they do that quite well. I'm not suggesting you have to be a contrarian. I'm just saying you need to adjust to the shorter term, let's say, cycles or moves in the market, and get out of your head that, you know, this is a 2-year investment. You know, maybe it's a 2-week investment. And there's nothing wrong with that. Now, I know that's for most people, it's like, wow, I can't do that. I've got a full-time gig. I can't look at the markets like that. Well, that might be true, but I don't think that longer-term stuff is going to work as well as it has. And I think the difficulty of it has been compounded. So if you can get access or have the ability to kind of change your game plan, I think that'll suit you really well, because there'll be plenty of opportunities for these shorter term trades, 2 weeks, 2 days, 2 months, you know, there'll definitely be some options. I just think having that longer term visibility is going to be really hard. So I think you have to adapt in some way, you know, outsource it, or, you know, learn some new skills as an investor or a trader.
Let's talk about just in terms of kind of your toolkit, when you talk about having a lower time frame, what are some of the things that will help you determine how to trade the lower time frames? Are there certain technical indicators, certain flow things that you look at? What types of things are drivers for you of decision making?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, on a shorter term time frame, obviously you're relying on momentum to carry you away from your entry point, whether it be up or down, depending on whether you're short or long. So you need to kind of be able to take the temperature of the market and catch that next wave. It's kind of anticipating to some degree. But, you know, there's some traditional technical analysis tools out there that can work. You know, momentum indicators like oscillators, they can certainly be very helpful, at least in terms of identifying where a move might have kind of exhausted itself, and we might look to resume in the dominant direction. You know, and when I say dominant direction, you know, on a short-term time frame. Options flows. Big thing for me, at least, you know, because that underlying options flow can create, you know, a nice tailwind for you in some of the underlying instruments you might be trading. So for me, you know, I'm always looking at what's the option volume in SPY, and not just the volume. I'm trying to get a handle on, are call buyers holding the upper hand, put buyers, because that's going to impact how I'm going to be looking to generate my trades. The other thing is some related markets. You know, I keep a very close eye on the volatility index, the VIX, because it's inversely correlated to the S&P. So if I can get a good sense of where the VIX is going, I can kind of line that up with where my entry point will be on the S&Ps. And then I think the biggest thing, and although it's not necessarily that timing indicator, but knowing which side of the market to be on, you know, just looking at minuscule trends. What's the trend on the 5-minute chart? What's the trend on the 15-minute chart? And trying to get in sync with that. And then last, but what I consider probably most important from my perspective is that getting a sense of where a lot of orders and trades have taken place. And you can do that. You can calculate that. All that is public information. It's how you assimilate it. But knowing where lots of trades have taken place over a, maybe say a fixed period of time, is going to give you a sense of an inflection point or an area where an inflection point will occur. And I like that as a measure much better because it's objectively based. I'm not looking at the market through my viewpoint. I'm looking at the market for what the market's left. It's left a footprint. It's telling me that, I'm just going to pick a number here, 4120 in the S&Ps is where a ton of volume has taken place over X period of days, look back, X period of month, look back, whatever your look back period is. Therefore, I know with a high degree of certainty that you're going to get a reaction off that level. Are you going to go long or short from that? Well, then that goes into your trading tactics. But at least that's illuminating where I should be getting interested in the market versus having less of an interest because there's nothing for me to lean on.
Everybody, please make sure you follow David Floyd here on Twitter. And as always, this will be on Spotify and Apple. Speaking about the options side of things, I've had a number of people message me arguing that the market seems to be kind of pinned here, that you've got a lot of hedging activity going on in the option space, and that's why it's been difficult to sort of see things break out one way or the other. Is there any validity to that idea? Is there anything on the option side that makes you think that we're just kind of in this sideways period for a while because a lot of players are?
We'll be back after a quick break.
Foodies unite with How You Dish. It's social media with a secret sauce. Food, the world's first network for food enthusiasts. How You Dish connects foodies across the world. Share kitchen tips and recipe hacks. Discover hidden gem food joints and street food. Find foodies like you. Connect, chat, and organize meetups. How You Dish makes it simple to connect through food anywhere in the world. So, how do you dish? Download How You Dish on the Apple App Store now.
Hedged?
Well, I think it's a great observation. So kudos to the listeners who posed that question. I think it's fantastic. And again, it's one of those things where I think it's really difficult to kind of get your head around it as to how that can help you like on any specific trade. But if you know that is happening, and I believe what they're probably referring to is the massive volume increase in the 0 days to expiration options, there's little doubt that that is going to cause seemingly random spikes up and down. What's interesting though, so again, let me go back to that for just a moment. It's helpful to know that that dynamic is happening. Does that help me identify areas where I might want to be long or short? Nah, it's really hard because one, you don't know the underlying order flow. You don't know what's a hedge versus what's an outright buy or sell. Just know that it is impacting the market structure and how the market operates. I think the only reason, though, that we're seeing such a prevalence of zero DTE options is that if you look at the VIX over the last couple of years, or even last 5 years, the VIX has not always responded the way it does when we get market dislocations, meaning if the market goes lower, the VIX should spike. Therefore, anybody long volatility should be rewarded when the market moves lower. And it's been a mixed bag. That hasn't always been the case. So you don't have to have your hand slapped more than once or twice to say, you know what? I'm not going to be long vol anymore. We just had the market move down 300 S&P points and vol barely moved. I'm done. But what they may do is they may move that volume from, let's say, 30 days to expiration, which is where the majority of that volume used to take place. Now it's all gone. It's not that the zero DTE has had a sudden influx of new volume. The volumes merely moved from the 30-day timeframe to the zero-day timeframe because that's the only way to generate a little bit of alpha just on short-term moves. But you're not generating alpha on the 30-day, but if volatility were to pick up again, I suspect you'd quickly see the Vol players moving back into the 30-day space. And that, again, will probably reduce some of that intraday randomness that I think your listeners were referring to. So to kind of tie all that into a nice, neat, short answer, it absolutely impacts the markets on a day-to-day, minute-to-minute basis. Getting your head around it, though, to make it useful, that's a little bit more difficult, and I'm not really sure that's possible. But, you know, when you get these seemingly random moves, you're just like, okay, you know, there's no way to go back and, you know, reverse engineer it. It's probably due to hedging by the dealers who are, you know, short or long the underlying, and they've got short or long options, and then they got to buy the underlying or sell the underlying to keep themselves hedged. And that's kind of like you're always going to be one step behind. You're not going to know exactly what the order flow is in terms of the dealers.
Speaking about going back to time frame, is there a particular part of the entire investable landscape where you'd be more comfortable having more of a, you know, longer term investment as opposed to the shorter term in and out? You know, there's sort of more of a relative fat pitch among treasuries, commodities, FX, equities. What are your thoughts on what's sort of a clearer upside trade here?
It's a great question, and I think I can answer it in two parts. I would say in terms of specifics, longer term, I like being long the dollar, and I like being long treasury notes or some form of fixed income. For me, TLT or 10-year notes works perfectly fine. So I'm happy there in terms of my longer term investments. And quite frankly, you know, even though I'm primarily a trader, short-term swing trader, you know, my retirement accounts still have to find a home. I just, you know, I invest those much more conservatively. And, you know, that is where I'm placing more of my bets now on those, you know, looking out for a weaker euro, higher values or, you know, higher prices in 10-year notes. So for me, it's a very portfolio approach. I've got my trading account, which is one piece of my portfolio, which is certainly a diversification tool in the scheme of things. And then I look at these other investment opportunities in my retirement accounts. And then naturally I use index funds for the rest of my retirement accounts, but I selectively move in and out of those when I feel as though the market's, you know, maybe not offering as robust of a return. Again, not a perfect process, but I'm not willing to commit new capital, at least in terms of being long equities at this point. I'm very comfortable with having a small exposure and maybe outweighing the percentage that I'm long the euro and or 10-year notes, because I think that's where I'm going to get the more bang for the buck in the next several months.
Any of this debt ceiling stuff impact anything or alter your way of looking at markets at all? I mean, I know that's kind of a silly question in the sense that we know it's going to get passed, but you know, there's a lot of interesting movement going on in credit default swaps.
Yeah, there may very well be. I don't follow that market very close, but it's probably something that people should pay attention to because it can percolate into other larger markets. So I think you mentioning that is a really good thing. Am I concerned about the debt ceiling? Part of me is kind of complacent because I've been in this industry for so long. I've heard this year in and year out, I never seem to remember it having an impact on me in a positive and or negative way. So maybe this is the one time, you know, where I get caught blindsided, but I'm not paying a whole lot of attention to it. Maybe it's just a big headline fest for the media companies. I don't know, but I'm not following it at all.
Let's talk about other ways that you tend to think about markets other than, you know, technicals and short term. Where do you tend to go to for research or for thoughts on different asset classes? You know, it's everybody always goes to, I just look at a chart, but you know, the truth is people do more than just look at charts.
Yeah. You know, I like to listen to podcasts where they interview some of these people that do various styles of investing and trading, and whatever catches my ear is kind of where I'll lean to. I only get one outside research service, and that's through a friend of mine who is partner in the company. It's called Nautilus Research. They do a lot of quantitative stuff, which I like because it's just giving me some raw data that I can kind of factor into what my overall view is. Maybe it has some impact, maybe it doesn't, but I like that. I like that type of a view. But, you know, I like to listen to the Top Traders Unplugged podcast. And I also like to listen to The Derivative because I like to listen. I don't want to I don't want to be listening to traditional portfolio managers in that sense, because that's not what I do on a day-to-day basis. And it's not to say that their views aren't valid. I'm more interested in what people are doing, like in the managed future space, what they're doing, even some of the stuff that's on the completely automated trading space, but they're coding in very specific strategies that are similar in the ways that I trade. So I like listening to people like that because it gives me an insight as to what they're doing, how they're framing the market, how they're seeing the market. So I find I'm getting my quote unquote outside research from those two venues quite a bit. And not all the interviews are necessarily applicable, but they're enjoyable. But some of them you're just like, ooh, that's cool. Or, you know, I hadn't considered that, or oh, I'm doing that too. So it's nice to know that that person's doing that. So yeah, that I would recommend that for those that are interested in really understanding the shorter term trading space. And again, shorter term doesn't have to be day trading. It can be swing trading. There's a space for that in everybody's portfolio. There's a space for that for you to take advantage of the moves, whether the market be a traditional grind higher market or a sideways choppy market that we have now. There's always a place for that in your portfolio. And I think those are two good sources to hear from different people about it.
So I think, you know, going back to, we agree that this is probably going to be a age of turbulence. The usual answer to an age of turbulence is just diversify more, and that will smooth out returns over time. I want you to lay out sort of the problem with the idea that diversification in the way that it's thought is the answer.
Well, yeah. I mean, again, diversification may dampen the volatility of your portfolio, assuming that you've picked a diverse selection of instruments in your portfolio, that they're non-correlated and whatnot. But I don't think anybody should settle for, I'm just going to hunker down. And if I can squeeze by with, you know, basically net no return or net very minimal or very, you know, minimal loss over the next 5 to 10 years, I'm okay. I think that's way too relaxed of an attitude. I think there will be opportunities if you're more strategically minded, because I don't think anybody can afford to just kind of sit on the sidelines, so to speak, for the next 3 to 5 or 5 to 10 years. You've just got to get in there and actually do a lot of hard work. I think I've been in this industry a long time, as you have, Michael. You know, I've often looked at it and go, this is very unnormal or non-normal for markets just to rise year after year after year, as if it's a birthright. I think that was the anomaly versus the norm. But we have a whole generation of investors who've known nothing but, and that's fine. Great. All the more power to them. They did well. But what are you going to do now? And that's the key question. And I'm not sure a diversified portfolio, it's certainly a good idea, but I think everybody can do better than that. I think you can be much more assertive in what you're doing with your investments and try to pull in that time frame a little bit. And I think that's going to serve you far better, because I still want to generate 8 or 10% returns. And I think it is possible, but it's going to be a lot of work. It's not going to be buying and then just walking away. It's going to be buying and managing that position, get out, move back into something several days, several hours, several weeks later, do the same process again. So you got to chip away at it, as opposed to more of the kind of the passive approach. And you're going to have to look for investments. If you're going to be looking to be putting things in your portfolio, you don't want to be quote unquote an active trader, you've got to find some funds or some managers that are able to make money in up and down markets, or what you hear in the industry, they have positive convexity on their returns. And I think that's so key right now. You know, I track for my own personal stuff, as well as managed account that I run, every day the market's up 1% or more in the S&Ps or down 1% or more, I log what I did on that same day, because I want to be making money on both instances, because that's what matters most in this market environment, in my opinion. You've got to be able to make money in the down days, and you got to be able to make money on the up days, so that you have a positive skew or positive convexity when you look at it from a up 1%, down 1%. That's what people need to focus on. Either set yourself up in a position where you can do that with your own personal accounts, or seek out managers who can provide that So you can have a sliver of that in your portfolio, because that's true diversification. That's going to generate returns, not just, you know, kind of build a moat around your portfolio where you're insulated. This is actually going to be out there trying to generate money regardless of what the market's doing.
I would add also, I think people think about diversification in terms of number of stocks or different asset classes. Diversification can come from different trading strategies and different time frames. I mean, it's just having a different return sequence, and that means you can diversify even with the exact same stock if you're just using different signals and different lengths of time for look back periods, right? So if we're in that kind of environment, that's a shift in mindset around what diversification is. It's more than just asset class, it's around strategy.
I think you said it perfectly. That was very succinct and spot on. You're 100% correct. And if all your listeners can hear what you just said, that's what I've been talking about, maybe just kind of, you know, more in more detail, but you just boiled it down to a slogan or a headline. That's exactly right. Think about it more in terms of your tactics as opposed to seeking out new investments. How are you managing those investments? That's perfect, Michael.
For newer traders, though, of course, the problem is, how do you even know how to do that, right? So I'm very loud about being cynical around most things that people will argue are trading strategies or signals that work, because I've tested and backtested a lot of things, and most things don't have predictive power. So even if you're going to do that, you know, is what's the right approach? Is the right approach to go for a small number of indicators that have some predictive power, that are reliable, that you always go back to, that tend to work? Is the idea to be more complicated? How does a trader even know about going about doing that tactical side correctly?
Well, it's a great question, and I'm glad you framed it in the way you did, because there's a lot of smoke and mirrors out there. You and I have been in this industry a long time. It's kind of saddening to see a lot of the BS that happens. But I think whether you're a newer trader or experienced trader, I think it's extremely important to have a narrow focus. Find out a handful of stocks or instruments that you're interested in and stick with them, regardless of what they're doing. If they're boring, just say, okay, there's nothing to do here today. You know, don't go off looking for greener pastures. Becoming a specialist and getting in sync with how that instrument trades on a day-to-day basis will serve you immeasurably over the years. And it, you know, if you're just getting started, that's certainly number one. So, you know, maybe you like tech stocks. Okay, I'm going to look at Google and Tesla and all these other stocks. That's my stable. Those are the ones I'm going to focus on. Then you have to find some sort of a trading approach. And of course, that's the hard part. There's no magical formula to come up with it, like you said, that has any consistent predictive power. But, you know, I would say start off with something very basic. Make sure you're trading in the direction of the trend. And the trend, you know, if you're a swing trader, maybe you're looking at an hourly chart or a four-hour chart. Make sure you're going long when the trend is up and only going short when the trend is down. That will save you countless unnecessary losses. That's rule number one in my book. Number two, you know, like I said, maybe look at some oscillators to kind of keep you from buying markets when they're overbought, by selling them when they're oversold. Again, I know these are very basic, but you have to start somewhere, and it's not a magic panacea. What ultimately defines your edge in the end is your experience and how you assimilate the various inputs you have into an executable trade. And that just takes time. There's nobody's going to offer you that. Even if the book is incredibly well-crafted and full of useful information, it's like taking a book on neurosurgery off the shelf. I could learn about how to do a disc replacement on somebody's spine, but unless you've done it a lot, you're not going to go in there and do it the right way. So you have to give yourself time. It's the one industry that I'm aware of, the only industry I'm aware of, where people show up day in and day out, successful in other areas of their professional life, and expect to have immediate success or relatively immediate success here in the investing and trading world. And the fact is, it's going to take time. I've been at it for 25 years. I'm still on my learning curve. I will never be off my learning curve because the markets are always changing. So I would just encourage people to go easy on themselves, start slow, start with a very basic process and keep a very narrow focus. And here's the other thing. It's so easy to, in this day and age of ubiquitous information, just keep your head down when the market's open. Don't be reading blogs. Don't be reading Twitter feeds and all that kind of stuff. There's a time and a place for that, but it's not while you're trading. Keep a focus on what the task at hand is. You're not going to see anybody, all the traders at Citadel or Susquehanna, scrolling their Twitter feeds while they're trading. Uh-uh. They're all going to be focused on trading. So I think that's the best advice I can give, because there is no single answer. You've got to start, grind it out, and over time you will gain your edge. And then you're just going to have to keep refining that edge as markets change.
How do people find some of your thoughts and work and connect you with David?
Yeah, I put a morning letter out that gives kind of some guidance on how I'm viewing the day. They can find that at aspentrading.com. They can also find out about the managed account program I have, which again is very short-term oriented, but again, meant to be absolute return-driven, positive convexity. And there's a free newsletter there they can get on the website where I just talk about what it's like managing money and being a professional trader. It's kind of sharing my thoughts from the front line. And I think that can be really helpful as an ongoing narrative for people to kind of hear from someone like me who's actually doing it, has a public track record, and is like, hey, today was a tough day because of X, Y, and Z, and I talk about it. Or today was a good day because X, Y, and Z happened. So I'm just sharing kind of the reality of what goes on day to day, managing your money, managing other people's money. And I think that can be an invaluable piece to that overall learning process. So that's all available at aspentrading.com.
It's a good place to wrap this Twitter space up. Everybody, please make sure you follow David Floyd on Twitter. David, good to reconnect. I'm glad you're doing well. And everybody, thank you for joining. Thank you, David. Appreciate it.
The content in this program is for informational purposes only. You should not construe any information or other material as investment, financial, tax, or other advice. The views expressed by the participants are solely their own. A participant may have taken or recommended any investment position discussed, but may close such position or alter its recommendation at any time without notice. Nothing contained in this program constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, endorsement, or offer to buy or sell any securities or other financial instruments in any jurisdiction. Please consult your own investment or financial advisor for advice related to all investment decisions. Don't forget to follow at Lead Lag Report on X, Instagram, Threads, and YouTube, and check out the Lead Lag Report at www.leadlagreport.com. Use promo code PODCAST30 for 2 weeks free and 30% off to get access to award-winning research and anticipate stock market crashes, corrections, and bear markets.